Herzlich willkommen beim Bücher- und Sonntage-Podcast. Das sind zwei Dinge, die ohne jeden Zweifel zusammengehören. Ich bin Julia Zieschank, Autorin von Jugend- und Liebesromanen. Mehr über mich und meine Bücher sowie spannende Extras findest du auf meiner Website unter juliazieschank.de. Und jetzt wünsche ich dir ganz viel Spaß mit der heutigen Episode. Hello, hello, hello. This is a very special podcast episode because this is the 100th podcast episode of Bücher und Sonntage. Can you believe it? 100 episodes. Wow. And yeah, when I'm looking back, I'm so proud of the journey and I'm so grateful for all of the amazing guests I had the honor to talk to within my show. Today actually marks the second podcast interview in English. I once already had one podcast episode in English, which was with an author, and her name is Hayley Dickert. And in this episode, Hayley and I were talking about living and writing in Germany, because back in the day, she was still living in Germany. If you want to get to know Hayley and also listen to her amazing marketing tips, then this podcast episode is for you. I will put the link in the show notes of this episode, so you can find the link to the podcast episode with Hayley Dickert in the show notes. We were talking about why she offers, for example, different versions of her books and whether it's worth having an explicit cover version and a clean cover version. So if you're curious, I would be very happy if you would check it out. And to celebrate this milestone, I will put my Lovebringer series to discount. So you will get the books to a reduced price for a very few days. And my Lovebringer series is the only two books I have translated into English language. It's fun YA story with a bit of magic sprinkled in, where a failed wish leads to a series of unfortunate events. And if you search for a book which will make you laugh but also evoke deep emotions and that summer road trip feeling, then you should definitely check out Bad Luck Shamrock, which is the first book in that series. And I just love that series so much, not only because it's available in English, but also because that story also deeply relates to me. I was visiting all of the cities in the book because they're doing a road trip through Europe, and I was visiting all of that places. And Mia is just a book lover like you and I. Yeah, in the book, she thinks things like, there between the pages, each of us can be a hero. And I still love that quote so much, even though I know I'm quoting myself, basically. But that book is quite quotable, I would say. To make you even more curious, I will just quickly read the blurb to you. He is the high school heartthrob who thrives on attention. She is the invisible girl whose definition of a party is her books and book boyfriends. What happens when the 16-year-old Mia receives a magic shamrock from a luckbringer which can grant her heart's desire? A failed wish that chains both of them to each other. Mia and Felix's sanity is at risk when they are not able to move more than 50 meters away from each other without the two crumbling down with crippling pain. So what do? They set off on a road trip to Ireland to find the Luckbringer, unsure whether the universe had decided to play a prank on them. Yeah, and if you are now curious and I hope a bit hyped, you will also find the link to my Luckbringer series, which is a two-book series. First one is Bad Luck Shamrock, and the second one is called Bad Luck in Love. You will find the links in the show notes to this episode. Now we finally get to the topic of today's podcast episode, which is what it means to be an artist. And therefore, I invited Brooke Shaden into my show because I'm really since 6 or 7 years following her fine art photography on Instagram. And I'm really amazed by her pics and find them very, very inspiring for my own writing and my own creative process. And we will talk about how she creates her images, but also about her upcoming novel, which is quite exciting. I cannot wait to read those two books. And yeah, also, I, for example, imagine writing as painting with words. So I find it very interesting to actually talk to someone who is basically doing both. You have the photography part and the writing part. And yeah, I'm very excited for this interview. And I hope you will enjoy it. So here she is, Brooke Shaden. Hi, Brooke. Welcome to Bücher und Sonntage, which means books and Sundays. I'm very happy you're here. And I think I've read on your website somewhere that the fastest way to your heart is through a book recommendation. So I think I start with that. So I recommend you to read The Time Traveler's Wife, which is my all-time favorite book.
You know, I've never read that book, which is such a shame. Like, it's one of those things that I feel almost guilty about. So that's a perfect recommendation. Thank you.
Yeah, then you really have to change it. I've read that book so many times, I cannot even count it anymore.
That's the best feeling when it becomes so known to you. I love that.
Yeah, tell us a bit about yourself. How did your story actually start and how did you become a fine art photographer?
Yeah, well, I became a photographer because I didn't want to do something else, which I think is how a lot of people find art. You know, maybe their parents want them to do something more quote unquote serious or something like that. And for me, it was actually, I was in a creative field. I was in college and I was studying filmmaking, and I graduated with my film degree and realized that I loved telling stories and I loved the visual medium, but I really disliked working with other people and I didn't like how long it took to bring my vision to life, to make a film. And so I said, okay, I'm going to do the same thing that I've been doing, except by myself with a still camera instead of a motion video camera. And it was the moment I started photography, I knew, oh, that's what I should have been doing this whole time. And so from that day on, I started doing self-portraits, conceptual self-portraits, more fine art stuff. And I've never changed my style since that day. So I came into photography not as somebody who was interested in being a photographer, but as someone who was interested in being a storyteller. And that felt like the best way at that time to do it, to just pick up a still camera, put it on a tripod, photograph myself, be the director, the writer, the cinematographer, and everything all in one. And yeah, I've been doing that for 17 years now.
That's really insane how long you're already doing that. I think I also already follow your account for at least 6 or 7 years. So I've been inspired quite a bit by some of your artworks, which is pretty cool. And I especially love how you bring light into darkness with your art. How do you illuminate darkness? Why are you so fascinated by it?
You know, it's a complicated answer because I think that we all have darkness in us. I think that that's a baseline of what it means to be human, is to have light and dark within us. And I realized from a pretty young age that a lot of people were not comfortable with that thought or that fact. And a lot of people shy away from darker things in their lives, whereas I was always drawn to them in a very natural, curious way. I'm also really afraid of dark things. Like, I'm afraid of death, and I'm afraid of, I'm afraid of the dark stuff like that, where it's why does that still affect me? I have no idea. But creating dark art, first, I was just drawn to it. Second, I started exploring it as a way of taking control over my fears and being able to craft the things that make me feel fear and then assert myself over them. And so it became a form of therapy, but also I just think death and darkness and all that is beautiful, like in a very fundamental way.
Think most of us artists somehow, I think, use their art in a therapeutic way, I guess. So at least for me, it's the same, like with my novels, and I'm also often writing about some darker topics. And in reality, I'm also like you, I'm actually very scared of death and things like that. But yeah, writing is my therapy, so.
Yeah, exactly. And I think it has to be almost like have I've never met an artist who would say, "Oh, I just started creating art because someone told me to, and I don't care about it." Like, nobody feels that way as an artist. You make art because it's in you and you have something to say, it's important to you. And so, I don't it's kind of interesting, this idea of art as therapy, because I feel like I don't use the art itself as therapy, but thinking about how to make the art is my therapy, because it's almost like having to restory your life in a way. Like, when you go to write a book or you go to take a picture, you have to think ahead of time. What do I want to say? How do I want to say it? What is this going to be? And the process of just brainstorming, I think, is even more therapeutic sometimes than the writing or the picture that you create. It's just like re-internalizing your experiences.
That's so true. And recently, you've been in Switzerland, which I find super cool because it's very close to where I live. Did your travels actually inspire you for future artworks?
Oh my gosh. So I went to Zurich, and I took a train to St. Gallen, which is a small town outside of Zurich. And I had this on my bucket list because there's this incredible library there. And so I went to the library, and I went in and I was like, okay, should I ask permission to take pictures, or should I just try to take pictures inside this library? But I asked, and I was like, is it okay if I take some photos? And they said, yes, but you have to have a strap around your camera if you're going to take pictures in there. And I did not have a strap for my camera. So I was like, oh no, okay, I'm gonna have to do this guerrilla style and like go in. And so I had my camera just like in a bag that I would pull out a couple of inches from the bag and snap a few photos and then stuff it back inside. And so I was there just like trying to get some stock images for something that I might composite later in my photography. But also to me, there's nothing more inspiring than a good library, like a place that just feels historic and dark, and like you can imagine there being a portal somewhere inside where you're going to go through to another dimension or something. And so, I went through the library, and then I sat outside. All the church bells were ringing. It's like a town known for its church bells. And I just sat there writing idea after idea for books, for poems, for photos. Like, oh, it was the best day of the trip.
Amazing. Actually, that library is on my bucket list for the summer. I also want to go there.
It's so good. They make you wear these giant slippers over your shoes because you can't like touch the floor and stuff, and it's very serious, but it was so worth it. It was so good.
And I'm excited to when I will see some of the library in your pics appearing.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, I hope. I don't know yet what it's going to be, but hopefully.
Yeah, what's actually the craziest thing you've ever done for a photo shoot?
Oh gosh, there are so many things. It's like I feel like I need to split it into categories of like dangerous versus illegal. You know what I mean?
Okay.
Because there have been some instances of possibly trespassing and other things. But honestly, I think What stands out to me is a very, very early image that I did it what the year I started photography in 2009, where I had this fish tank that I filled up with water and milk so that it would look kind of murky inside the fish tank. And then I did a back bend over my couch so that my head went in the fish tank upside down. And it was a very small opening of the fish tank. So I kind of had to get my head just in the right way. But if you've ever dunked your head in water completely upside down, it's almost impossible to stop water from going up your nose in that position. And so I went into the fish tank upside down, back bending over my couch, and all the water rushed up my nose. And I had to then get my head back out of the fish tank to like exactly in the same angle, or else I couldn't get my head out of the fish tank. And that was terrifying. Like, that was one of the worst photo shoots I've ever done. And I have the picture. It's on my Flickr site. Like, it's still there and I love it, but it was really scary. And like, I'm not sure that I could bring myself to do it now.
It already sounds scary.
Yeah, it was. But like, I love doing stuff like that for photos where, you know, it's like physically uncomfortable because then you remember it. Like, it becomes a core memory, and that's so exciting to not just get a photo from it, but to have this experience too.
Yeah, I can also relate to that because I also like to somehow experience the things I'm writing about.
Ah, that's so cool. I should do that. Now you have me thinking about it. I'm like, yeah, I need to go like shoot a crossbow and like do some things that I write
Yeah.
about.
Yes, actually, I once also tried that. I'm not very good at it, but I also was trying it. Yeah.
That's so fun. Love it.
Is there a picture that means the most to you personally?
Yeah, probably. I have an image, of myself where I have a bunch of raspberries smeared on my thighs and all over a table. And that image is, you know, about not having children and my journey as a foster parent specifically, but I know that it speaks to a lot of different people about their journeys with motherhood. And so I think that image is probably the most meaningful just because it's a really rare thing as an artist to create something that feels innovative and exciting and real to you as the artist that also resonates with other people. You know, usually it's like something people really like something, but you're like, why? Like, why did they like that thing when I tried so hard on this other thing that they didn't care about? You know, it's hard to like match those things up. And so when an image really touches me and then travels into the world, that's like, oh, it's the best feeling ever to know that your story resonated somehow.
Yeah, that's so true.
Yeah.
It also fascinates me how you can tell a whole story in just one pic. I find that super cool. Do you think that this works so well because images are more powerful than words? I mean, you basically show instead of tell, which is one of the most important rules in writing, show, don't tell.
Yeah, well, I think that the what is different is that imagery, visuals are a universal language. You don't have to translate it into other languages. It's very easy to, and actually we use language to understand imagery in a lot of ways. So, for example, I can create an image with a girl in a red dress, and that red dress will have symbolism for people because red as a color symbolizes different things depending on the context. So the color red in one context might symbolize love and passion. In another context, it might symbolize death and rebirth or blood and stuff like that. And so, depending on how you depict that color, the audience will immediately have an association with it because visuals are so symbolic. And this goes for locations that I might photograph or a certain type of wardrobe or a prop or anything like that. And so, when you put a lot of intention into every single element of an image, people understand it instinctually because we understand symbolism instinctually. It's just part of our culture going back hundreds of thousands of years. And so when you look at the written word, it's a little more complicated for people all over the world to understand what you're trying to say, particularly because we rely on syntax and we rely on the our culture to understand how certain sentences are meant to be interpreted. And so that's why, translating a book is so hard because the specific meaning is so nuanced in the written language.
Yeah, I also experienced that a lot because my husband actually is from Poland, and I'm often also somehow saying some things like word by word how I would say it in German, and then we don't understand each other.
Right. Yeah. I mean, my first language is English and it's my only language. My husband's first language is English, but he also speaks Spanish. And even just having grown up in a Spanish-speaking household, we often I'll say something, he won't understand what I mean by it. And and that's there's barely 2 degrees of separation. It's really interesting how language gets corrupted, changed, misunderstood, etc.
Yeah, that's how it is. Do you know that image is a circle of the creative process that goes like, yeah, this is awesome, this is tricky, this is shit, I am shit, this might be okay, this is awesome. So we have that full circle. How often are you actually in the this is shit stage, or does your creative process look completely different from this?
It does look different, actually. And I find this to be really different from most creatives. And I have no basis. I don't know why I feel this way, but I tend to think whatever I'm doing is great, which sounds ridiculous. Like, who says that, right? Like, nobody thinks that. But I have so much fun making stuff that I'm doing it. And I'm like, this is so fun. This is going to turn out great. Like, I'm eternally optimistic about it. And then if it doesn't, then I'm like blindsided. I'm like, wait, how did that turn out bad? I'm so confused. It's not that I can't see that it's bad. Like, I know when something turns out poorly, but I always go into it with so much optimism. And then I'm like, oh, wow, that sucked. How did that happen? And so for me, it's actually kind of opposite where I'm like, I start off at a high and then I'm like, oh no, it didn't go how I thought it was going to. But the good thing is that I tend to create really quickly. And if and this even goes for books because, obviously writing is a novel is so different from taking one photo. It's completely different. But at the same time, whether I'm writing or taking photos, I can move on really fast. So if something isn't good, then I'm like, okay, it's not good. Put on your big girl pants and move on and do it again, just do it again. And so I'm very quick to be like, okay, that sucked, but I have the opportunity right now to fix it and just try again. And so I try not to get too down about it if it's bad.
Sounds way more enjoyable, to be honest.
Yeah, actually, I think it is. And this is like, I think that every person on the planet has a superpower. And I think that mine is just that I'm really optimistic about the process of making art. And so this is what I try to bring to the world. Like when I speak at events or I host an artist retreat or something, I'm there being like, listen, I can teach you some stuff, but what you're going to get from me is just this unbridled enthusiasm and optimism about the creative process. And I think that's contagious. And it doesn't always work for me. Like there are days where I make something and like the whole experience is bad and it turns out bad. And then I get really upset about it. And like those days happen. It's not like I'm always like, that's fine, whatever, everything's cool. But more often than not, I can brush it off fast and just get right back up to that high of like, I'm gonna go do it again. I'm gonna make something new.
So that also means for you, it feels easy to let go of things which aren't good.
Yes, I am like the master of letting go of things. And this is a constant conversation I'm having with my husband, which is like, he wants everything to be perfect. And I just want everything to be done. Like, my favorite quote is, done is better than perfect. Because I'm like, you know what? Tomorrow's another day. Like, I can just make something else. It's fine. It doesn't matter. And I feel the same way about writing, where it's like, I might write a scene. Be like, oh no, that really fell flat. Like, I know that's not good. And but I know that if I just wait a day and then I look at it again, I'll have the energy to rewrite it and it'll be fine. Like, it's not worth being upset over because it's just art. Like, who cares? It's not like I'm curing a disease. You know what I mean? Like, I can put it away and do something else. And so when you think about it that way and you pull back to be like, okay, I'm just this little speck of a person making art on this planet. It's okay to fail at it. Like it doesn't matter. And it's okay to fail publicly too. Like I've released work all the time where I'm like, this was a failed piece of art, but here you go. Like, you know, if you like it, take it. If you don't, then you can like make fun of me with me and it's fine. And I did an exhibition once called Happy Accidents, where my gallery, one of my galleries, had seen this artwork that I thought was bad, where I was like, oh, these are my failed pieces of work. And she was like, I don't know why you think that. I really like a couple of these pieces. And then she came to me and she said, what if we do a whole show of your failed art, like the art that you thought wasn't good enough to put in your portfolio? And so I was like, this is a bad idea, but okay. And so we did it and we printed, I think, 14 or 15 pieces for the show. And the show almost completely sold out on opening night. And it just goes to show that like what you think is a failure certainly might not be to somebody else. And you're not a good judge of your own art, probably.
Yeah, that's true. And I think it can be also very encouraging for other people.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, like I've had so many people write to me and just say, I feel so much braver about creating because you show your failures. Like you're not always just making hit after hit. And it's like, of course not. Like nobody is. And if they're not telling you that, then they're just lying. So
what does being an artist mean to you?
You know, I actually have struggled to define this over the years because in the art world, people always tell you that you have to make art for yourself. Like that's, if you're a real artist, then you're making art because you have to, because it comes from within. And I don't disagree with some of that. I think, of course, art comes from within. It comes from your experience of the world. But to me, being an artist is half for me and half for other people. Like it's taking into account the way that art affects the world and affects people and makes them change their heart and their minds about things. So when I make work and it's at my best and I feel really good about it, it's because I've made something that expresses my personal experience, but equally is meant to be for the public. Like it's meant to be for somebody else to experience at the same time. So I think being an artist is, evaluating how you see the world and then putting it out there so that other people can be inspired by your vision.
Yeah, I think that makes sense and I can also relate to it. For me, I always like to say writing is sharing dreams, so like that I'm daydreaming and I like to share what I'm daydreaming
that.
About. But I also feel what you said, that I'm also creating for other people. So even so, I sometimes also write about more tough topics or darker topics, I feel like I still want to also shine a little light on it and bring a bit of beauty into the world so that people.
Absolutely.
Yeah, because people who are reading my books are doing that in their free time. So I want them to also enjoy it and, yeah, like I said, to have some nice time and some beauty within it.
Absolutely. I couldn't agree more with that. Yeah.
Brooke, you are a storyteller, whether it's through your fine art photography or your novels. Where does the urge to create and tell stories comes from?
Oh, that's such a good question. And, you know, I feel like there's some answer that I haven't found yet to this question. And I know that other people don't feel compelled to tell stories, but I can't imagine that feeling. Like from like my earliest memories, I've wanted to tell stories in different ways, whether through prose or poetry or video or film or photography and other things too. Like I also sculpt in my free time and do mixed media and stuff. And like, it just never ends, my desire to be telling some story about something. And I know that that must go back to, you know, prehistoric times when like people were, you know, drawing on cave walls and stuff like that to communicate with other people. I know that there's some base instinct in us that what makes us want to share with other people. I think though that the people who don't call themselves artists or storytellers still probably have that instinct. You know, maybe you're at a party and you're talking to somebody and you have this joy in telling a story to somebody, whether it's just like, oh, I was on the subway the other day and this thing happened, or, you know, basic things that happened in your life. Everybody is drawn to that in some form. And I think some of us are just drawn to make it prettier, you know, to like think about it more and to wrap it up in a bow and give that to people. And I don't know why I'm one of those people. I just know that I see the world in stories, you know, like I experience, and this is actually kind of a problem that I've had with my therapist in the past, which is that she would tell me, you know, you're out there having these experiences, something happens to you, and you know, you've lived this thing, but then I too quickly rewrite the story in my mind of what that experience was. And it's really a form of coping with trauma often is if you have something bad happen to you, your brain might try to rewrite the story of what happened to make it feel better than what actually occurred. And so I do this with everything. Like my brain is always restorying different events in my life. And so I think probably I have that natural inclination to tell a story about an event and make it more exciting or more happy or joyful or darker, you know, like there's always some inclination to be like, how can I make this more extreme in my mind?
I see the world in stories as such a beautiful quote.
Yeah.
I'm amazed. I also believe that in your early artworks, we see books much more often. Is that right?
Yes.
Yeah, and I think it's beautiful. It actually shows the connection you've always had with books. And I also think that you once said that books were actually your first passion even before photography. So, since when have you been writing?
Well, you know, I've like one of my core childhood memories is having this little notebook that I would write poetry in when I was probably like 7 or 8 or something like that. And I thought it was amazing poetry, of course. And, you know, I would just write down little things that I noticed. And that was the first time that I felt like, oh, that's what I want to do, is I just want to write. And then I was a very practical child. And so when people, and I'm sure you've heard this and many people have heard this, which is, you know, you shouldn't be an artist. That doesn't make money. You have to do something more practical with your life. And so I thought, oh, well, I love writing. I love reading. I love stories. So I'm going to be an English teacher. And that's what I'll do with my life. And so as I went into my teen years, that's what I thought I would do. I was like, I'm definitely going to go to school to be a teacher. And that's what I'll do. And then in my senior year of high school, I found filmmaking. And it just so happened that I don't want to say good at it, but I was very invested in it and innovative in what I was doing at the time. And I actually made this little short film that won a little film award in the area at a film festival. And so I was like, oh, this is what I'm meant to do. I should do filmmaking. And so I went to school for that, but I also have a degree in English literature because I never gave up that dream of like, well, I do want to be a writer, or if I can't be a writer, then I guess I should be a teacher, you know, like just trying to rationalize everything. So from a very young age, I wanted to be a writer. And then I, you know, at some point you realize like you're just bad at something. Like I started writing again and I was like, oh no, I'm bad at writing. Like I have to learn how to be a writer. And so it was a journey. There was a big gap of like no writing in between.
Yeah, and soon you'll be a published author, so congratulations.
Yes, thank you. I'm so excited. It's honestly the biggest thing to ever happen in my life. Like it might not seem like it to other people who have, you know, been with me through my photography career, but on a personal level, this is huge.
Yeah, it's super cool, especially when you hold your books first time in your hands. I think that's always the best feeling.
Oh, I can't wait. It's like I feel so far from it and so close at the same time, but it's great because my book comes out in a year and I feel really grateful for this time before my book is out, where there's no criticism. Like it's still mine. I'm just enjoying it. And it feels I'm scared for a year from now in a way when it's not just mine anymore.
It's true. It's always scary to send a story out into the world.
Yeah, definitely.
What makes a story good to you?
You know, it's characters. Like I try to be a person who can read for the action or the, you know, whatever the plot, and I'm just not. Like I need to be all in on these characters. I want to feel every emotional depth and layer that they possess, and I want to feel like they're just, you know, like making real decisions that have real weight. But you know, like I'm a sucker for a love story in any way, whether it's friendship or, you know, romantic love or parental or anything. Like I love for there to be love in a story, and that's what I'm most drawn to in storytelling. Yeah, in any way.
Will your books be as dark as your art?
You know, it depends on who you ask. Because I don't know. This is the problem. Like, I feel like I'm too close to it to know for sure. There are definitely some very dark things that happen that I think people will be surprised by. But if they know my art, will not be, you know, like they will get it. But I think that what will be most surprising to people who know my art is that while the book is laced with dark things, like dark themes and dark, you know, scenes and actions, it's actually pretty funny. Like there's a lot of humor in the book, and there's a lot of like tender moments and things that I think aren't necessarily present in my visual art. And so I think the book is tempered by there being humor and love and like all of these emotions that don't find their way into my photography.
What lessons have you learned from writing your manuscripts?
Oh, what haven't I learned? I think the biggest thing is that the only way that somebody becomes a professional at something is if they don't stop doing it. That's the only way. Because this is my third book that I've written, but the first one that is being published. And after I wrote my first one for many years, because you know, like your first book takes forever. It's, well, maybe not for you, I don't know, but for me, it took forever to write a book. And I finally finished it, or thought I did, and I sent it to agents and got rejected a bunch, and then rewrote the book. I was like, okay, I'm gonna get this book represented. And then I finally got an agent. We took it out on submission to publishers and nobody bought it. And so I was like, okay, I'm panicking about this. I'm gonna immediately start writing another book just to have something else to put out there next. I did that. She put it out to publishers, nobody bought it. So I immediately started writing my third book. Like, and all of these were days after going out on submission to publishers. So she would send it out, and then 2 days later, I'd be like, I'm writing my next book, you know? And so I would start writing. And the third one got picked up for publication right away. And it was just this a great example of how if I had stopped on my first one and put all my eggs in that basket and said, this has to be the book that I sell, and like really kept trying, I think it would still be just sitting there in inboxes, never touched, never read. And I would have just stopped. And I think that's where a lot of people stop, is that first book or that first, you know, body of work that they're making visually or whatever it is. You think, oh, well, I'm not good at this. I'm not successful. Nobody wants it. But the truth is that you're just not good enough yet. You know, like you just have to keep writing and keep trying. Eventually, you're bound to find success. I mean, it might be 2 books later, it might be 10 books later. But yeah, the only thing that makes someone a professional is that they just don't stop doing what they're doing.
That's true. I always like to say that writing is like a muscle and you really have to train it. The best would be daily, and the more you train it, the better your writing also gets.
Absolutely. It's so true. I mean, I can't believe how much I've learned in the last couple of years. It's been like just such an amazing journey of learning.
Is there a symbiosis between writing and fine art photography? Do they inspire each other?
Definitely. There's At least for me, the way that I work photographically is to work symbolically. And that's exactly how I write. So at the forefront of my photography is theme. I'm always thinking about what is the overarching idea that I want people to understand about this image. And that's exactly the same thing that I brought into my writing, which is there's an idea that I want the reader to understand. Now every word has to serve that idea. And that's how I write, is by really understanding the theme of the book. And that's how I create images, by understanding the theme of the image. So for me, there's a lot of overlap. Where there was less overlap than I thought that there would be is visually. I really thought that by being a visual artist, writing visual descriptions in my book would be a lot easier. And I found that to just not be true. Like I found myself no more superior at writing visual descriptions than anyone else. And if anything, created them, wrote them as too overwrought. Like there was just too much going on in the descriptions, because I'm thinking visually and trying to be like, no, you have to know that, this roof is yellow, and that this, bird is red, and like all these things. And people would be like, yeah, we don't need to know all of that. Like, this isn't a photograph, We don't need to know all those details. And it's like, okay. So finding some balance there was actually difficult.
Okay, that's interesting. But yeah, I can imagine that it's like that.
Yeah.
I often get inspiration for my writing from actually other arts like music or photography. I also told you already that some of your pics have inspired scenes in my novels. Where do you get your inspiration from?
Yeah, it's I think from other books in this case. And not specifically an entire book, but how a book made me feel. So I can imagine, my favorite novels, and how I felt as I read them. And I hold that feeling inside as I'm writing mine, of like, one of my favorite writers is TJ Klune, who wrote The House in the Cerulean Sea, which has sold millions of copies and whatnot. And I remember the feeling of reading that book, of just like pure love and hope as I read that book. And that's one of the feelings that I brought with me into my writing, is like, how can I hold that feeling and then transmute it onto the page to make sure that my readers feel that same feeling. And yeah, I think that's the biggest thing. And it's interesting, because my photography, I take inspiration from vastly different things than I do in my writing. Like in photography, I'm really inspired by classic paintings and really just older mediums of art. Whereas yeah, in writing, it's more of just feelings.
Do you have some favorite classic paintings?
Oh my gosh, of course. There, my favorite painting is by Bouguereau, and it is a painting called Dante and Virgil, and it is in the Musée d'Orsay, and I just got to see it in person like 3 weeks ago for the first time. It's amazing. It's massive. It's so good. And that painting is everything that I love about art. It's like, it's drama and violence and sexuality and skin, and like, just it just feels carnal, and it's so good. It's like, and the painting style is amazing. So yeah, anything dark that is like kind of grotesque but also beautiful, I love.
I have to look that pick up actually, and now I'm curious.
Yeah, yes, you have to. It's so good. It's so good.
I only have one final question now left for you, and it's one which I ask all of my guests, and that is, how or what does a perfect Sunday look like for you?
I go to the farmer's market with my nephews and niece, and I drink a lot of tea. I go on a hike. I read a book and I write. I mean, if I could pick a perfect day every day, it would be that. But that's my perfect Sunday.
Ah, farmers market is amazing. Unfortunately, we only have that on Saturdays here, so on Sundays I cannot do it.
Mine is on Sundays, so I was able to answer perfectly.
Yeah, it's true. Yeah, thank you, Brooke, for taking the time to here in the podcast, and it was such an inspiring talk. I really loved
Oh,
it.
you. I'm so grateful, Julia. Thank you for inviting me and for asking such wonderful questions.
So, und nun wieder auf Deutsch. Ich hoffe, dir hat die heutige Podcast-Episode gefallen und du fandest das Gespräch genauso inspirierend wie ich. Schreib mir doch super gerne einmal in den Kommentaren bei Spotify, ob der Satz Schreiben ist wie Malen mit Worten mit dir resoniert oder vielleicht auch der Satz, der von mir stammt, Schreiben bedeutet, Träume zu teilen. Das ist ja wirklich so mein Motto. Und ich war, wie gesagt, schon immer eine kleine Träumerin, besonders auf langen Autofahrten als Kind, da ich ein Einzelkind bin. Saß ich da quasi nur mit Erwachsenen im Auto und das war immer sehr langweilig. Und daher habe ich mich schon damals viel in meine eigenen Welten geflüchtet. Und ja, heute schreibe ich diese Tagträume eben auf und bringe sie für dich aufs Papier. Tatsächlich habe ich auch noch für dich als deutsche Hörerin eine kleine Überraschung, denn ich habe mir gedacht, zum der 100. Podcast-Folge, ich weiß auch gar nicht, warum ich immer denke, zum 100. Podcast-Geburtstag, oh Gott, ich glaube, den erlebe ich nämlich gar nicht mehr. Aber zur 100. Podcast-Folge wollte ich auch noch für dich was Besonderes machen. Also zum einen, natürlich kannst du auch die Glücksbringer-Reihe auf Englisch lesen, wenn du das möchtest, aber ich habe einen Sammelband erstellt und das war jetzt eine ziemliche Spontanaktion, muss ich ganz ehrlich sagen, weil ich irgendwie nicht so richtig wusste, was noch cool wäre, also neben dem Interview und dem wollen Interviewgast, obviously, was noch cool wäre. Und zwar dachte ich dann eben, ja, dass letztes Jahr im Juli und August ja meine Trilogie erschienen ist. Und zwar Die Schmetterlingskönigin und die Seelenjäger. Und ich finde, diese Bücher sind eben auch perfekte Sommerbücher, denn sie spielen ja zum einen im Sommer in Venedig und zum anderen sind sie, ja, ich würde sagen, so Dark Romantasy. Also irgendwie auch sehr passend zu Brooke Shaden und ihren Fotos. Und ich muss auch ehrlich sagen, dass ein paar ihrer Fotografien mich auch wiederum maßgeblich bei meiner Schmetterlingskönigin inspiriert haben. Also wenn du da mal mehr darüber erfahren möchtest, kann ich mir auch mal überlegen, ob ich da vielleicht mal irgendwie einen Post dazu machen kann. Und noch ein bisschen mehr erzählen kann, welche Bilder von ihr das genau waren. Vielleicht kann ich die Bilder dann auch auf Patreon zum Beispiel verlinken, dass du sie dir eben auch ansehen könntest. Also, dass ich da eben den Instagram-Link zu den Fotos mit reinstelle. Sag mir das gerne mal, ob du das interessant finden würdest, jetzt quasi so als Follow-up zu der Podcast-Folge, dass ich mal die Bilder raussuche von Brooke, die mich so inspiriert haben und sie eben verlinke auf Patreon und eben vielleicht beim Lesen von meiner Destifying Secrets Reihe, wirst du dann sogar merken, wo die Bilder in der Story vielleicht auftauchen oder was genau daran inspirierend war. Ich finde sowas ja irgendwie immer total cool, also auch bei anderen sowas zu sehen und finde das immer total interessant und witzig. Und ja, also schreib mir das gerne mal, ob das auch für dich interessant wäre. Und ja, ich hoffe, du freust dich, dass es den Sammelband gibt, denn natürlich ist der wesentlich günstiger, als sich beide Bände einzeln zu kaufen, ist ja eh klar. Den Sammelband gibt es als E-Box. Und ja, den Link dazu findest du natürlich auch in den Shownotes zur heutigen Episode. Der Sammelband trägt einfach den Reihentitel, also Destifying Secrets. Ja, ich glaube, so zum Abschluss lese ich dir auch einfach nochmal den Klappentext vor, um dich auf die beiden Bände so ein bisschen einzustimmen. Eigentlich wollte Lou nur ihre beste Freundin in Venedig besuchen, doch seit ihrer Ankunft wird sie von einem Raben verfolgt. Als er sie zu einer geheimnisvollen Insel führt, die nur sie sehen kann, ahnt Lou nicht, dass sich dort der Eingang ins Totenreich verbirgt. Eine düstere Welt voller Nebel, Magie und tödlicher Gefahren. Reagiert von der mysteriösen Schmetterlingskönigin. An ihrer Seite der charismatische Seelenjäger Marco, der ihr Herz schneller schlagen lässt, als sie sich eingestehen will. Bedroht vom Dunkellord steht das Totenreich am Rand des Untergangs und nur Lou kann es retten. Gemeinsam mit Marco muss sie das Geheimnis ihrer Seele lüften, denn das Schicksal der Welt der Lebenden und der Toten steht auf dem Spiel. Aber je näher Lou der Wahrheit kommt, desto näher rückt auch die Gefahr. Ja, und ich würde mich natürlich freuen, wenn du jetzt Lust hast, in eine Welt einzutauchen, in der Uhren am Himmel wie Vögel kreisen und Schmetterlinge mit Augen auf ihren Flügeln jeden deiner Schritte verfolgen. Wie gesagt, den Link findest du in den Shownotes zur heutigen Episode. Und dann habe ich an dich nur noch die kleine Erinnerung, dass du auch jederzeit über den PayPal-Me-Link in den Shownotes Danke sagen kannst. Und ich würde mich natürlich riesig freuen über ein kleines Dankeschön zur 100. Podcast-Folge. Das wäre wirklich mega. Und wie gesagt, ich hoffe, du gehst hier heute auch mit einem richtig guten Gefühl raus und inspiriert zum Schreiben und zum Kunst erschaffen. Und dann hätte ich nur noch die Bitte an dich, den Podcast in einem Podcast-Player deiner Wahl zu abonnieren. Denn dann verpasst du auch garantiert keine zukünftigen Episoden mehr. Und damit bleibt mir nur noch zu sagen, ich hoffe, du schaltest wieder ein, wenn es Zeit ist für Bücher und Sonntage. Bis zum nächsten Mal.